Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Subscribe to the channel, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Hit the bell for notifications. Get your holiday gear at StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code Stu10. Get 10% off your order. We have Jill Savage coming up on the Caitlin Clark thing. We've got a new Time Person of the Year. Pretty obvious, but we'll get to that in a minute. We're going to start, though, by doing the American healthcare system because, I don't know, I'm getting a little annoyed. Everyone's saying how bad it is all the time. Well, of course, we understand. Everyone's been mad at the healthcare system. Everyone thinks it sucks. And, you know, that's, of course, why it's okay with a guy with the nice abs to go shoot the CEO of United Healthcare. Not everyone goes that far, but there is this sort of idea that the U.S. healthcare system is uniquely bad. And I just don't think it's true at all. One of the things that's interesting about all of this, the manifesto came out from this murderer, who, by the way, we do not name on this program. He wants to be famous, and we're not going to give that to him. Whatever little piece of that pie we can remove, we're going to do it. But he had a manifesto that was leaked to the media, and he had all sorts of stuff in there. He talked about this, and I think you can kind of like think the liberal sort of like vision of who this guy is outside of the abs. Was this guy with this, you know, he was affected by the healthcare system. He had his tough life, and his family's finances were ruined because they turned down coverage, and he was struggling with this horrible thing that wouldn't get covered, and he studied and he worked so hard and he protested and nothing would work, and then he finally broke and he went and he killed this guy, and thank God he did because he was wealthy or something. And you know, you think this guy sat here and studied healthcare policy and he knows what the answer is if anyone will just listen. And then you read his manifesto and you realize, no, this guy's like got a first day on Twitter understanding of the healthcare system. It's absolutely pathetic. Let me just give you this one little excerpt. He says, you know, this had to be done. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. A reminder, the U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system in the world, yet we rank roughly number 42 in life expectancy. This is like the first day of healthcare arguing university. You walk in there and they're like, okay, it's healthcare arguing 101. Here's the first crappy argument you'll ever hear about healthcare. Did you know we spend a lot and we have a lower life expectancy? Anyone who's ever done anything as far as understanding healthcare has seen that argument from the left. And it's one of those that if you have a person who has, you know, a decent level of understanding of this issue, like the left doesn't even go back to it. Like they know the right has arguments against this and the arguments are too good, so they don't even bother with this one anymore. And yet here you go. Like, I don't know, maybe there's some romanticizing of this kid. And it's like maybe you'd think, all right, well, you know, there's some romantic understanding. He was this man who understood this issue. No, he's just an idiot. He's just another idiot. In fact, in his manifesto, he actually cites, he says, I'm not really the guy to be the one to argue this. I don't really know it all that well. You just murdered a man for it. What do you mean you don't know it that well? What the hell kind of thing is that to say? He's like, actually, you should ask Michael Moore. He really uses Michael Moore's name in there. One quick question for you. What if instead of Michael Moore, a murderer had the name Glenn Beck mentioned in their manifesto as a source for all of their claims? What do you think would happen? Would it be the same thing that's happened to Michael Moore? Which is not that everyone has said he's dangerous and should never be heard from again and he should be locked up in Guantanamo. Instead, it was they bring him on the show to explain his positions. Well, tell us, well, what he cited you in the manifesto. What is bad with our healthcare system? It's unfreaking believable. Basically, it's based on this chart. Now, this is not the chart's fault. It's just a misleading chart. It's a chart from Our World in Data. misleading life expectancy. And what you have is all these countries, if you spend more, you have higher life expectancy. You see it pretty consistently across the board. And there's this one outlier country, the dark line there that goes up and to the right. And is we spend a lot more and we get worse results. We have like 2 or 3 years less life expectancy than a lot of these other countries who spend less than us. And that proves, obviously, our healthcare system sucks. That's the very basic argument that you hear from liberals all the time. And it is a very basic understanding of the issue. Again, you could see how it could win over someone on their first day on Twitter, right? Like, you could see how, like, oh, gosh, I'm going to click like on that. That sounds like a good point. It's not a good point at all. Now, one way you can separate this out is to look at healthcare once you get to 65 years old. And I want you to think about why that is important for a second. This is a very big generality, but if you happen to die before 65 years old, usually there's some really crazy thing, right, that happens. You know, maybe it's a terrible disease, maybe you get hit by a car, maybe you get shot, maybe you have a terrible accident as a child. Who knows what it could be? But if you die before 65, generally speaking, it's a little out of the norm. You die over 65, you could still get shot. You know, you could get pancaked by a dump truck driver much very late in life. But generally speaking, old age tends to be the factor there. So if you've made it to 65, the healthcare system can kind of like take out all those crazy accidents and all those other things that happen earlier in life, drug abuse and all that. Well, what happens when you do that? I want to focus on the work of Vincent Galoso, who's an economics professor at George Mason. He says, the United States' weird position on this chart has not too much to do with healthcare as one would first think. The U.S. has a high rate of car fatality and car ownership. The mortality is concentrated among young people, and they have heavy reduced life expectancy at birth. If you shift the life expectancy to 65, which is bound to be less affected by this, the U.S. is not as much of an outlier as you would see, the big black dot. Now, by the way, this is Chartapalooza episode of this program. I'm going to do my best for you podcasters out there. Of course, we'd love to have you on YouTube as well. The same goes both ways. But you see the black dot, it's right in the middle of all of the other countries on this scatter chart. It's something right exactly where you'd expect it to be. Life expectancy once you hit 65 is relatively normal when it comes to that. So the issue, of course, is people dying before 65. Why are they dying before 65? Vincent goes on. The United States, as Emily Oster has pointed out, report infant deaths in a far more different manner than elsewhere. This makes America look like it has a higher infant mortality rate than elsewhere. An infant mortality rate has a big effect on life expectancy and birth. We've talked about this before. It is a factor when it comes to life expectancy. First of all, one of the things we do, and this is really a good thing about our country and our healthcare system, is we really do everything we can to try to save every baby when they are born. Even when they're born at times like 21 weeks, when it's almost impossible to save, we try to save those babies and we count them as babies. A lot of European nations do not count them as babies. They count them as basically miscarried because it's before they're actually, get into their statistics. That is a factor here, and it's a significant one. Vincent goes on, my friend Bob Lawson once told me, this next quote is going to hang with me for a very long time when it comes to these issues. My friend Bob Lawson told me that America is not a poorly functioning European country. It is a highly functioning Latin American country. Well, it's a pun. It's insanely descriptive. Like most societies in the Americas, with the exception of Canada, the U.S. is a high homicide society, especially for its income level. Again, that idea of everyone's like, well, look at Europe. This is what Europe's like. Well, it's not even on our continent. If you look at our continent, we are one of the highest functioning countries. And you might have a little bit of a hint, if you're a conservative, to think of as why maybe it's more instructive to look at us as a highly functioning Latin American country, largely because a lot of the people from Latin American countries are coming across our border all the time. So, like, you would think, okay, maybe, certainly the racial makeup is a lot more similar when it comes to diversity than a lot of the European countries we're compared to all the time. It is just really doesn't make any sense to compare us to those nations, but I understand why it happens, and I'm happy going up against any of these countries anytime. This matters. Why? Because homicides tend to affect young people disproportionately, and thus life expectancy at birth estimated in timetables. If you remove homicides from this, you get a higher life expectancy at birth. Why does this all matter? Because all three factors do not speak to the quality of health care. They are non-medical factors behind health outcomes and in no way serve to speak the performance of the American healthcare system. Americans driving a lot is not a health care issue. It is a road safety issue. Americans shooting each other more than Europeans is not a health care issue. It is a law and order issue. You can piss all you want on the healthcare system, but America is not the outlier you think in terms of health outcomes. And of course, we all know in reality that's true. We have these arguments that are not based in reality. We have these like alternate realities we adopt for certain arguments. Let me give you one. No, there's no difference between men and women. Of course, that boy that just was a boy 5 minutes ago is now a girl. They just said so. When you have those arguments with people on the left, you might be thinking, wow, they're really wrong on this. And the truth is, no, they're not. They're not wrong at all. They agree with you. They know exactly what the truth is, just like you do. They're just saying the wrong thing because they think they're supposed to. They don't actually believe the stuff they're saying. That would be crazy. Obviously, we'd be locking up people in institutions all over the nation if that were the case. You don't just change your gender because of a series of magic words. That's not how that works. We all know that. Everyone knows that. But you kind of adopt this false reality for the purposes of these arguments so that you can go on Twitter and say things. In reality, everyone knows the U.S. healthcare system is actually pretty good. Is it perfect? Of course it's not perfect. It's definitely not perfect. And there are a lot of issues with it, many of which we've covered on the show. Glenn wrote a book with a chapter outlining lots of them. But at the end of the day, it's better than anywhere else. How do you know that? Because the people all come here when they get in real trouble. Yes, they can handle colds okay. Actually, the common cold doesn't really have a cure, but you know what I'm saying? They can handle basic healthcare stuff okay in other countries, and they can do things. They can manipulate the way you pay for it. They can make it seem free when they give you really high tax rates. But at the end of the day, the care is not at the highest quality. It's not as good as it is here. Let me give you some more information on this from Jeremy Kaufman. Healthcare spending in all countries attracts income. A richer country is, the more they spend on healthcare. The richer the country is, the more they spend on healthcare. The U.S. is the richest country in the world, and it spends the most on healthcare. Okay, all right, that makes sense. But are you getting results out of that? Well, it's pretty clear to see that really no matter what the results are, you spend more as you have more when it comes to cash. Healthcare spending increases rapidly with real incomes. The way this chart works, you see all the countries plotted on this map. The blue line is the indication of where you would think these countries would fall on this chart. And the blue line that goes from the bottom left to the top right, the U.S. should, if it's performing as it should fall right on that blue line. And guess what? It falls right on that blue line. The health share of consumption rises rapidly with incomes. Same type of thing here. As you see, incomes go up. People spend more on healthcare. The USA falls basically directly on the blue line of expectations. The evidence that U.S. healthcare is uniquely expensive is weak. All goods cost more in richer countries. Guys, do you know this? Have you ever? This is like the most obvious point in the world, but also really, really important to this discussion. Yeah, you go to countries that place things don't cost as much. Well, that is going to, of course, mean that their healthcare costs likely are lower as well. All goods cost more in richer countries. In richer countries, human time is more valuable. Does healthcare in the U.S. cost more? Yes, but not in any way that wouldn't be predicted by wealth. Again, lots of fancy blue line charts going from the bottom left to the top right of your screen with all the countries plotted. USA should be following on these blue lines roughly, and they do in all four circumstances when it comes to all sorts of things like heart failure and appendectomy and cesarean section and all sorts of colon cancer surgeries. All wealthy countries have more of their economy consumed by healthcare. The richer a country is, the higher of a percentage of that country that is employed in healthcare, and the more they get paid. Again, nothing unique about the U.S. The U.S. is just rich. And think about this for a second. Isn't this kind of a good thing? We always complain about this with teachers, right? Teachers, they're not making enough money. Teachers should make more. We should be spending more. And you look at our education spending, you're like, we're actually spending a lot on education already. The same thing happens in healthcare. In healthcare, we do spend more on healthcare because we pay our health workers a lot more than other countries. And like, I feel like remembering in COVID, while you watch everyone's like banging pots and pans out the side of their window, and everyone's, the healthcare workers are in hospitals doing dances. The call was, hey, these people need to be rewarded. Why do we pay them so little? They're the heroes of our society. Well, we kind of do that, right? Like, I'm not saying there's certainly people who are underpaid in the healthcare system, but we pay better than in a lot of other systems. And of course, all the people asking for universal healthcare never want to acknowledge that. I mean, you'd be taking money away from healthcare workers. Do you want to take money away from healthcare workers? You can have that system if you want it. Actually, you can't, not while I'm living here. By the way, let me give you some more charts. Chartapalooza continues. 1% increase in income predicts a 1.2% increase in healthcare employment per capita. It is a blue line. It goes from the bottom left of the chart to the top right of the chart with all the countries plotted on it. And the U.S. should fall pretty close to that one. And then this one, actually, it doesn't. It falls a little below the line. And the next one, same thing, right about on the blue line, exactly where expectations would be for our income levels. That's what it's supposed to do. U.S. is uniquely drug addicted, violent, and fat. That is a good sentence right there. Damn straight, yo. We are drug addicted, violent, and fat. I mean, can we work that line into the Star Spangled Banner? I don't know. It might be a little too late for that. Let's give it a shot. The U.S. has a shorter life expectancy due to behavioral choices of its residents. We kind of talked about this earlier when it comes to car accidents, when it comes to shootings and murders, when it comes to being fatty, fat, fatzos. It's just true. Look at these charts. Here's you've got a little bar chart for you. United States is the top country. You can see it way out exceeding every other country when it comes to interpersonal violence, transport injuries, and drug use. We are way off the charts. About 2 years less in life expectancy lost to those causes than, like, let's say, Japan or the Netherlands. Same thing when it comes to drugs, cars, and violence, and diet, metabolic, if you conclude being a fatty, fat, fatso. In fact, when it comes to drugs, cars, and violence, if you take every other country that we're compared to all the time, and you say, okay, add all those things up, and add in all of the obesity deaths that they have, just our obesity deaths, what beat all of the countries. That doesn't even, before you even start getting into the other measures. The point being here that we are a violent, fat country. And I like it that way. The point is, though, those are life changes, choices. We talked about this during Unpopular Monologue Week a while back when it came to processed foods. And like, as we pointed out, the effects are really, really small, almost impossible to detect when it comes to processed foods. But like, to be clear, Americans are making a choice that they sometimes want to eat like crap. And that is a choice that, if you do it enough, will wind up wiping out some portion of your life later on. And you might wind up living a less healthy existence. And you know what? A lot of Americans are saying, okay, that's fine with me. I'm going to do that. I really like my Cheetos. They're delicious, by the way. I like my Cheetos, too. It is a choice that might not be the right choice when you're coming to your long-term health. But like, that doesn't explain the healthcare system. That doesn't mean that doctors are performing worse or we're charging too much for an appendectomy. What it means is that Americans make choices based very, again, this is going to stick with me forever now. We make choices like a highly performing Latin American country, not a poorly performing European country. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And by the way, if all this stuff adds up, you might ask some people, hey, well, I mean, what do you think about the healthcare system? I mean, does this mean that Americans hate their healthcare or like their healthcare system? Generally speaking, despite everything you've heard since this assassination, Americans pretty much fine with it. They're pretty much fine with it. Dominic Pino wrote this. Most Americans like their health insurance. The Kaiser Family Foundation of Consumer Experiences with Health Insurance is a major research effort conducted in 2023 to understand how Americans think about their coverage. It found that 81% of insured adults rate their health insurance as excellent or good. Only 3% rate their health insurance as poor. 3%. We're told that all they're doing is denying claims. You probably know somebody who that's happened to. I really hope it isn't you because it sucks. And I will say, when you have a problem with your health insurance, it can be really difficult to unwind it. They operate a lot of times in a way that seems a lot closer to the way the government operates than the way most public private companies, operate. It feels like you're in the middle of this crazy bureaucracy. And a lot of times that's because you are. It's just a different type of bureaucracy. So I'm not saying that every experience is good, but like we're talking about, I mean, what other things have 81% approval ratings? It's not super common. And when it comes to only 3% saying they have a really terrible experience, that's pretty notable. By the way, that's not the only survey that shows this. A 2020 Gallup poll found that 82% of Americans are satisfied with the quality of the care they receive. 74% are satisfied with their coverage. 67% are satisfied with what they pay for health insurance. I know at times I feel like it's pretty expensive, but still, most people are like, yeah, that's about right for what I'm getting. 2024 Pacific Research Institute survey found that 91% of insured adults are satisfied with their current plan. Only 6% of people rated their health insurance as poor or very poor. The bottom line here is that we do not have a perfect healthcare system. We have a pretty good one, though. It's pretty good. And I got to say, I challenge it against any other system in the world. You go there and I think you'd find misery. You know, saying your claim has been accepted, but you have to wait for 17 months to have the surgery is not, you know, care. That's not what it is. Being inserted on a waiting list is not health care. And I would much prefer the system that we have here. But this is the key. And this is something that maybe a lot of people in the media and the left and Elizabeth Warren, for a very specific example, might not understand. Even if your health care is horrible, you still don't assassinate CEOs of healthcare companies. This is not a hard point to understand. This should be a really super easy one to get. You should get it. Like if you're sound asleep and it's 3:18 a.m. and someone wakes you up and says, hey, you, should you murder CEOs because you don't like your health care? You should immediately, with no qualifiers, understand the answer to that is no. And it's a really shocking thing. I would like to see the polls. I will say, there's one thing that's been pretty interesting in this whole thing. I would like a poll. The thing I want the most and the thing I want the least is the same thing here. I would like a poll that tells me how many people think that assassination was justified. And at the same time, the thing I want the least is to see the results of a poll that asks the question, how many people think that murder was justified? Because I am really interested to see, and I'm really hoping it's just a bunch of crazy people on social media and Taylor Lorenz, but I have a weird suspicion that that number is going to make me really, really sad. With the world being as crazy as it is, why wouldn't you think that it's a good idea to have some emergency medicines on hand at home? We were just talking about the healthcare system, and it is a good healthcare system. You know, some of these medications that have been created are miracles. Think of all the things we used to die from. I mean, you get a bacterial infection, not that long ago, and you might just die. And then we came up with antibiotics, and all of a sudden things are a lot easier. However, we do know that we are very dependent in our healthcare system on China. And that's not a good thing. That's one of the problems that we have in our particular society right now. Because if things go badly, you think about the tariffs Donald Trump's talking about. If they try to say, we're not going to send any of the medication, God only knows where that lands. It's good to prepare, right? It's called the Jace case. You can prepare for medications that you need. You could stock up on medication now so you're prepared for whatever happens, whether it's a flood or a hurricane or a tornado or a terrorist attack or just a supply chain disruption. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics and medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. One of the things that people use the Jace case for is overseas travel. You know, you bring it with you on overseas travel. You don't have to worry about the healthcare system in whatever crazy country you're going to. You don't have to deal with that. You bring a good old American healthcare with you overseas. It's a great way to use it, and you can use it for emergencies as well. Of course, it's Jace.com. Jace.com. Use the code STU at checkout for a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com. Jase.com.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I want to bring in Jill Savage. She's the host of Blaze News Tonight right here on Blaze TV and also noted Caitlin Clark fan and defender. Jill, welcome to the program.
Every time you have Caitlin Clark on, any topic that is surrounding Caitlin Clark, I will be offended if you don't bring me on. Right. So I'm excited, actually, to be here and kind of defend my girl.
Okay, good, because I had Pat Gray on yesterday and we were talking about various topics and we got to the Caitlin Clark thing. And I asked him for a personal exemption that I would I could just act like it didn't happen, because I like Caitlin Clark. And in the story, if you missed it, she won Athlete of the Year, which I think was well deserved. There she is right there. But inside the interview for this particular article was her talking about how part of the reason she's there is because of white privilege or something. It was a little nonsensical, and I just want to forget that it happened, but you think there might be a little defense here?
Yeah, I mean, one, we can forget that it happened and move on, because it's exactly what we do with the 24-hour news cycle anyway.
Yes.
But until then, we have to talk about it in the meantime, right? So let's get into it. When you look at Caitlin Clark, she grew up admiring the WNBA, and Maya Moore was her favorite player. So now she's in this position where all the little girls are looking up to her. So Caitlin wants to kind of turn around and say, hey, these were my idols. This is what I had to grow up with as well.
Sure.
I understand that she wants to give the accolades to the people that have been there before. However, now you see it. Okay, let's set the table for people who don't understand what she has been doing, right? If you go back to the start of her senior season, they had an exhibition game that they played in Kinnick Stadium. It's the football stadium at the University of Iowa. They had over 55,000 people there for an exhibition game. It's the largest viewed audience for a women's basketball game. That's how her year started. It ended that year in the national championship game, where the women's national championship game had more viewers than the men's national championship game. Her stardom just continued to skyrocket as she gets into the WNBA. So she's been on a national stage for an entire year with no breaks.
This is a really good case for her to be Athlete of the Year.
Yes.
Which I think was really well deserved. And it has been, because the way the seasons work, which is kind of ridiculous with the NBA, WNBA, but the college season ends and basically she gets drafted immediately and they start the WNBA.
Yeah, they have like weeks in between the end of the season and the start of the WNBA.
Now that's a good argument for her to be tired, Jill.
Yes, it is.
That's not necessarily a good argument for her to be talking about white privilege.
No, but what has happened in that time, because she has been thrust into this national stage for so long now, and she's constantly asked, because she's a straight, white female, well, what do you think about this and that and everything? Right. Like, everybody wants to know what Caitlin Clark feels about all of this sexuality and racism. And she's like, I'm here to play basketball, right?
Yes.
And that's what she has done consistently throughout there.
And that's one of the things I really like about her.
Exactly. So now I think you get her in an off season, and she's not just constantly surrounded by the game. She has time to sit back. Okay, so where is she? Who are her peers now? Well, her peers are other WNBA players now. Her management team, she's repped by Excel Sports Management. They're in New York, in LA, in Chicago. So who is she getting advice from now? Who's in her ear now that wasn't in her ear before? What Caitlin will learn is that you cannot get out. You can't nice your way out of them hating you. She thinks she can right now. And let's tie this back to the WNBA, because 17% of all flagrant fouls were committed on Caitlin Clark. 80% of those were from the Chicago team, which is led by Angel Reese, her now, you know, as the media has put it, like her nemesis on the court, right? Like this is the media narrative.
The rivalry,
exactly, that they put out there. So she's trying to say, yo, I don't want to get beaten up. What if I just say the things that everybody wants? What if I be that person that they want me to be? Now, she's 22 years old. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know, right? I was taught at a young age, you reject the premise, right? Rush Limbaugh, my dad, people in my life are like, you can't do anything to make them hate you less. Once you give in, they're just going to hate you more. They're going to keep doubling down. She hasn't learned that lesson. I think that she truly believes that if she says the things that everybody has been waiting for her to say, they're going to like her. They're going to accept her. She wants to be accepted in the WNBA. This is her way of kind of extending that olive branch. Now, hopefully, she'll see all of this for what it is in the next year or 2 years and realize, oh, they hate me. They're just going to hate me anyway, right? Like, I covered women's basketball for a living, right? I've interviewed everybody from a Cynthia Cooper to a Breonna Stewart to a Sabrina Ionescu. And Kobe took Sabrina Ionescu under his wing. He saw greatness in her. He wasn't like, oh, you're a white girl. Let me help. No, you are a great basketball player. She was the triple-double queen in college. And he saw that and wanted to make something of her. Now, the people like Steph Curry and LeBron, not noted, you know, to be fans of LeBron on this program.
No.
But they are looking at Caitlin and they're like, man, look at what you're doing. Now, Steph Curry, he's black. He revolutionized the NBA, right? Everybody was like, wow, look at this guy. Look how entertaining his style of play is.
That's
what Caitlin Clark is doing. Yes. It's not because she's a white girl. It's not because, like, listen, right? I'm from Grimes, Iowa. She played for the All-Iowa Tech and Dowling Catholic High School. My cousins played for All-Iowa Tech and Dowling Catholic High School. I'm an Iowa Hawkeye. She is, like, the greatest Hawkeye of all time.
Sure.
Nobody loves Caitlin Clark more than I do outside of, like, her family and maybe, like, her coaches. I love her, and I think that she still will have a good head on her shoulders. I think that she will learn from this moving forward.
I hope you're right. I mean, so it's not necessarily a defense of what she said. It's a defense of her as a person. She's going to have some moments. She's young. She's just going to slip up. Because when I read the comments, I didn't think they were egregious. I didn't think they were like the worst thing I've ever read. It wasn't the worst woke thing I've ever read. To me, and tell me if take your temperature. Let me take your temperature on this. To me, it felt like somewhat consistent with what she's done this entire time, which was take whatever was going on and just decompress it and, you know, and try to take the fury out of it, right? Like, she's got a rivalry. No, we don't have a rivalry.
Yes.
You got elbowed in the face 48 times in that game. What happened? Oh, it was no big deal. That's just
basketball. It's a basketball play.
Right, exactly. All that stuff.
Yeah.
And this was like, I think, as a person who grew up in this era, she thinks, oh, yeah, you know, well, of course, white privilege, but we're going to, you know, lift up other black players as well, and we're all going to get a lot. Like, I think almost to her, this was her attempt to sort of downplay it. Like, this is what she thinks as a 22-year-old in the year 2024 that you're supposed to do. I hope she wakes up from it, but I don't know. It could go either way.
Right. Well, I mean, look at the state of the country right now with all the DEI nonsense. That's what she grew up with.
Yeah.
Right? Like, her first year in college was the COVID year. They had the cardboard cutouts in the stands.
Oh, wow.
And this is just, it's a different reality, right? She wants to be Michael Jordan, where she is just focusing on ball all the time. But she didn't live and grow up in the 80s and the 90s like he did. She's in this bubble, and whether you like it or not, right? Like, the Babylon Bee had the anvil that was falling on Caitlin Clark, and they were like, oh, it's just a basketball play. It's fine. We don't need to call a foul on this.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting cultural world. Now, I can tell you, having covered women's basketball, it's not just the players and the coaches. It's going to be the media and the management circles. Everybody in her world right now is on one side of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
I don't know about her and her family personally, but I can tell you that the surrounding Caitlin Clark bubble is going to be one side. And I think with that in mind, the fact that she has only done this so far shows you that she's trying to walk that narrow road
right.
still.
I mean,
Because it is large. It is a big bubble surrounding her where they want more from her than just this. This will not be enough for them.
I think superstardom, there's a certain level of superstardom that just winds up equating to liberalism. It brings it along. Mm-hmm. Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus should have grown up, probably their country, there's country heritage there. They probably should have grown up to be, moderate. Yeah. And instead, they're both insanely liberal. Why? I don't know. I think you get to that certain level of superstardom, especially as a female for some reason, and it tends to bring that. I hope that doesn't happen. So I will wait your transition. I will take Pat's exemption, and I'll just act like this didn't happen for a little while and hope we don't get another example for at least, 6 months.
I'm hoping for even longer than that.
Yeah, I don't want it to go down that road. I don't want it to go down that road because I like her too much. I do.
Yes.
Now, we can both agree, absolutely, the time athlete of the year should have been Caitlin Clark. We can also, I think, agree the person of the year for Time, Donald Trump. That was announced today. I can't possibly think of anyone else it would be.
Do you remember, though, let's talk about the shift from the Time magazine covers when it was like the orange face that was melting to, oh, by the way, he's the person of the year. We know he's cool now. We're going to jump on board the cultural shift. And this is why I think we might have hope for Caitlin.
Yeah.
Because the entire culture right now is shifting to America is cool. It is great to be a part of this. We're going to take our country back. You could talk about God, like they had a nativity scene on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol steps for the first time ever. Like, we're taking the country back. It's exciting. And it is absolutely the person of the year, Donald Trump. Everything has changed since July 13th. Moving forward, absolutely everything in this country has changed, and it's for the better.
And July 13th was the assassination almost date.
Yes.
That is true. I mean, like, it's, I think even without that, he's probably still a person of the year, assuming he also went on to win.
But I don't think we get the same Donald Trump without that.
Yeah.
And I think that him coming so close to death, where he's like, you guys, Russia, 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 the first time, all this crap that you did through my first administration. Okay, I wasn't cool with that. Now you're trying to kill me? Okay. You know what?
It's a serious.
I don't care about anything.
He doesn't care about Mika's facial surgery anymore.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, it's a focus.
It doesn't matter to him now in a deeper way. He cares about actually making changes in this country. And again, it is a blessing in disguise that he didn't win re-election in 2020 and that we have this version of Donald Trump in 2024 because we at least have the hope that we might make some actual significant changes in the federal government.
I'm just happy that the United Healthcare situation didn't happen earlier, or they would have given it to the assassin. That's where he probably would have gotten in. Instead, thankfully, that didn't hit their deadlines. Jill Savage, be sure to catch her on Blaze News tonight. It's right here on Blaze TV. Don't miss it. Jill, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Imagine this scenario. A nuclear blast devastates Los Angeles, throwing the nation into total chaos. I have to imagine that scenario because I work with Glenn Beck and he talks about it like every single day. This is the setup for Angel Studios' upcoming film, Homestead. It is coming to theaters on December 20th. Have you seen this yet, Jill?
No, I haven't. I really want to, though.
Yeah, it looks really good. Glenn saw it, said it was amazing.
It is Glenn's type of movie, too. let's get into the doomsday prepper, Homestead.
This is the ultimate Christmas movie for Glenn Beck.
it's a heartwarming tale.
The film is packed with heart-pounding tension, moral dilemmas, and a thrilling story that cuts to the core of what it means to survive. Homestead explores the humanity behind the apocalypse. You can pre-order your tickets right now, and you can get a chance to win in their great giveaway. It's like $300,000 giveaway. It includes one Bitcoin, a fully furnished tiny home from Box House, a custom Polaris OHV by Sparks Motors, and everything else you'd need to start your own Homestead. So watch a movie and then get prepared for the actual apocalypse. Sounds great. Pre-order tickets for your chance to win at angel.com/stew. Angel.com/stew. If you haven't seen any of the Angel movies lately, they're doing a great job giving movies that are just incredibly entertaining movies on their own that also have good messages behind them. So check this one out. Homestead, it is coming on December 20th. Angel.com/stew.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Well, Joe Biden has heard your complaints about pardoning his son, Hunter Biden. And so he's decided to commute the sentences of 1,500 Americans in a single day. The most by any president in a single day ever in history. Amazing. 39 people were he pardoned, and 1,500 people he commuted the sentence of, convicted of nonviolent crimes. In a sweeping act of clemency during his final weeks in office. The White House said it was the largest number of commutations by an American president in a single day, which is an amazing thing to brag about. But the commutations affect those who had been released from prison and placed in home confinement during the coronavirus pandemic. So as far as actually changing these people's lives, it's not going to do much. A lot of them were, it's going to do something for them. I'm not going to say it's nothing, but it's house arrest. These people were already not in prison, but they were many of them were living at home. Still, certainly good for them, I guess. And they always say that thing of nonviolent offenses. You never know with that term. A lot of times what happens is someone with a violent offense and a drug offense, they plead down the violent offense and just get the drug offense. So it looks like it's a nonviolent offense, but in reality, sometimes that crosses the line. Hopefully they didn't have any of those in there. We'll see if some names pop up. A lot of times it takes a couple days for people to kind of go through these lists and see, wait a minute, you pardon who? So we will see as that goes. But no relatives. That's coming on the last day. Jim Biden coming soon to a pardon near you. Also, we have Elizabeth Warren. Can we pardon Caitlin Clark? Or do we commute her sentence? Do we commute the sentence of Caitlin Clark for her white privilege comments? We'll think about that a little bit later. Maybe we'll have Jill back on. Okay, Elizabeth Warren, I mentioned her earlier as well. She said that violence is never the answer when it came to the United Healthcare CEO being killed, but people can only be pushed so far. No, that's not how our society works, actually. You're not supposed to be murdering people. Even if you're pushed really far, which, as I covered in the first segment today, they're not really being pushed all that far. She did wind up backing off of this, by the way. She, in a statement to Politico, she said, violence is never the answer, period. I should have been much clearer, and there is never a justification for murder. Oh, that's nice. That's really nice of her to be able to come out and say that. Again, I bring up that same imagery of being asleep at 3:30 in the morning and someone waking you up out of a sound sleep. You know, you might not even remember where you are. You know, you're like, oh, gosh, where am I? Am I in a hotel? Am I home? Where am I? That happens when you're out of sound sleep and you just wake up suddenly. You'd still be able to answer that murdering people is not OK. And there's no pushing people too far that justifies their murder. But she's trying to get a commutation on those comments. And you know what, Elizabeth? You're really annoying. So no. Do you want to secure your financial future? My guess is probably so. You probably want to set up maybe future generations. Hopefully they have a little leg up. If you work really, really hard, maybe you can help them out a little bit. That's a laudable goal. And we are now in a situation where the markets are doing pretty well. Donald Trump won. Things look like they're turning up and looking up. But the work doesn't stop there. There's still a leftist nonsense out there that we have to root out. And if you could minimize the amount of money in your portfolio going to things that you don't agree with, maybe, just maybe, that would be a good idea. Because, I mean, yeah, buying something or not buying something in a store can help. But think about thousands of dollars in your retirement account going to these same woke companies. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Divest yourself from the companies you don't agree with Constitution Wealth. Your investments are some of the most powerful weapons you have to fight the culture war. And that is what the idea of a parallel economy is all about. With Constitution Wealth, you can partner with advisors who truly understand and share your conservative patriotic values. So take action now. Get a consultation. You'll really like talking to these guys, and they can walk you through the entire thing. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze. constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Sign up. Get a free consultation today. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze. Okay, so here's what happened. This is in Massachusetts. A couple people, actually, running from the cops. They are trying to, they had a search warrant on a property, and the people who were being searched decided they didn't want to be caught. So they ran around. One of them, they both somehow got onto this roof. One of them jumps down, and they wind up capturing. The other one goes up on the roof and kind of just disappears. And they don't know where he's going. They're looking all around. Suddenly, a person who's passing by says, look, he went down the chimney. That's not a good way to escape. It's that chimney I went down, and here is the very unfortunate picture of him down inside the chimney, because what happens when you jump down a chimney from a roof? I mean, look, hopefully you're just not the type of person who's unlucky enough to have a fire at the bottom, but there was not a fire in this case, but what there was a chimney that was not wide enough for him to be. Take that off the screen. It's terrifying me just looking at that photo. He got stuck in the freaking chimney. And if you have any phobias, all of them were just lit up. I apologize for that. But the police eventually just had to dismantle the chimney brick by brick, eventually getting him out and, of course, arresting him. So fun day for the police, I'm sure. They were happy to do that. Okay, this is our last show of the week. We have a couple shows next week, and then I will be out for Christmas break. So we will get you all the stuff that you need to know over the weekend, and then we will be gone forever. No, just for a little bit. We will see you in just a couple days.